So, Keith, we routinely get cross at or above altitudes from ATC, and there is this assumption they are safe. We don't question them. Yet you put this squarely on the shoulders of the pilot. How can you do that?
I think it's pretty easy because the chart tells you exactly what altitude you need to be at for that segment. The controller did say at or above rather than at. I think the problem is that many pilots are conditioned to skip the at or above because there's very few cases where we actually exercise that liberty, particularly when you're getting vectors to final for an approach. You tend to want to drop as low as possible as quickly as possible, so I think pilots' brains naturally filter out the at or above. I bet if you surveyed a bunch of pilots, half of them would, if you wanted them to read it back, they would actually read it back as at rather than at or above. I think they don't even hear it.
I agree with you, Keith. I think the big problem here is that conditioning, but that can be overcome by a proper briefing of the approach because those MEAs are there for a reason. They're indicating altitudes that below which you may have some issues there. So with the clearance cross at or above, I would have maintained 10,000, and I would only have done that if I had properly briefed the approach to start with.
One of the things that I teach all my clients, and this is a constant, is typically the clearance is at or above, and I stress the fact you do not have to be at. And I use the vertical speed required function of the Garmin equipment and whatever it is, 534, et cetera. I use that VSR function all the time. And that, I go into the brief to find out what do I need, and typically it will be at that IF. And plan to be at that altitude just a couple of miles before. The other thing that I've noticed is that so many pilots are just a yassa to ATC. And we have to remember that we are the ones in charge of this flight. And as Keith said, you know, if this guy flies into the rocks and kills himself, the controller still goes home and has a cold, frosty one. We're in charge of the flight, and it's our responsibility as pilots to fully brief an approach and make sure that we're aware of all those altitudes, and it's part of the briefing.
Absolutely. And I think it can be summed up very easily in a very popular phrase. It's trust and verify. You know, you have to trust ATC because we don't have the entire picture. We don't know what the other airplanes are doing. They know the procedures and everything, but it's incumbent upon us to verify all this stuff. And that's what didn't happen here was the verification of the incorrect altitude assignment. It's the error chain. You know, one piece by itself, if the controller had given that incorrect altitude and we caught it, error chain's broken. But now there's two steps down the error chain, incorrect altitude, and we accepted it and started descending. So, you know, the next piece in the error chain would be a lot worse. So,
well, you know, I agree with you fellas that the briefing certainly is a big part of getting this correct. But the other piece of it is, whether you've briefed the approach plate or not, when that controller cleared him direct to that intersection to cross at 8 or above, and that's the basic part of his instrument approach, it's incumbent upon a pilot to have a look at that approach plate and see that altitude before he even leaves the 10,000 originally. So this fellow didn't. He started down, then he looked later, which was almost a deadly mistake in his part.
I think that's a common trend, is that if you were given that altitude, being that you're, you know, 40 or 50 miles from the airport, you figure you'll drop right down to the altitude the controller gave you, and now let's work out the rest later. I mean, that's a long segment. We've got plenty of time to brief the rest of the approach. Surely the action is going to happen after the initial approach fix or maybe the intermediate fix. No one really expects things to get hot and heavy on the feeder segment.
But you know, you got to wonder if this pilot was also thinking, geez, here I am not that far from the airport, and I'm still at 11,000 feet or so. I know it's in a bowl. I know I got a lot of altitude to lose before I can get down there. Maybe kind of primed to start down early and you know, keep going rather than a flat land kind of experience where you're flying around at 3,000 feet or something like that.
Especially in a faster airplane where, yeah, you know, he's only 30 minutes out from the airport at and
30
still,
miles.
Yeah. So it's close to the airport, essentially. Yeah. It's already starting to think ahead. So getting that gouge to get ahead on the approach makes a fair amount of sense.
I'm just wondering, because I was flying up in Canada last week, and Canadian controllers would have cleared this as clear direct for the Connolly transition. They always include transition as part of the clearance, even when it's just that standard T-configured RNAV approach that we do. They always say it as the transition, which almost makes you look at the altitude for that transition. And I wonder if in this situation, had there been a clearance of that nature, might have given the pilot the heads up. Mm-hmm. I'm just asking. I don't really
know.
That's
a good point. That's a good point for consideration.
And there's something interesting about the design of this approach, too. It's not a TAA type. It's an RNAV approach, but it's not a TAA. So it's kind of a old-school blended feeder route. And it actually has an MSA, which most RNAV approaches don't have anymore because you have a TAA. So, and I've always thought MSAs are kind of misleading. It's almost useless information. And yet it's showing a high altitude. And I think a lot of people have come to eliminate, to disregard that, because how many times do you see an MSA that's 10,000 feet above the airport?
You always have to go below the MSA to land.
Right, right.
So we routinely go below the MSA
to land, and you tend to ignore it.
Well, that's the point of an approach, right?
Exactly.
You're not stuck above the airport. You found the one channel through the rocks.
Right, but some people think of the MSA as like the minimum safe altitude. So it's, but anyhow, and you tend to disregard it as opposed to a TAA.
I'm wondering what would have happened if the controller had issued the bare bones clearance here. Because remember, we were actually not on a random route to Conley. We weren't cleared direct Conley. We were actually on an airway that had its own MEA, and we were at 1/1000. Technically, the controller could have just said cleared approach. Or cleared RNAV Delta approach if they want the specific one. I wonder if the pilot would have had to do a little bit more digging at that point. You know, if they weren't given that hard altitude of 7,800 or the at or above, I wonder if they'd been left to their own devices, if they would have actually come up with the right answer or not.
That's a very good question. And probably they would go back and say, are we cleared to descend?
Right.
You know,
Is there an ATC requirement that an altitude be given with the clearance?
Not if you're established on a published route.
Okay.
And you can descend right to the MEA at that point, or whatever the segment altitude is.
Which would have been slightly misleading because the MEA for the airway is 8,000. So it's a bit of a trap. You could descend to the MEA, but you'd actually be right where the controller ended up putting us. So you'd have to look ahead and say, okay, what I really need to drop down to is just 10,000.
And that may be kind of the crux of what happened here. It's unusual that you have a section of the en route structure that you're coming off of that's lower in an MEA than the transition you're going on. Kind of the whole point is the transition brings you down from the en route structure into the initial approach fix, right? So it's generally, so we're mentally primed for this kind of step down. But I'm also wondering, at what point do you not query? Because we're constantly given altitudes that may be below, certainly below an off route altitude, because we don't know what the MVAs, the MIAs are, and occasionally even below, you know, what might be a published MEA if we're an RNAV aircraft, right? Because we don't, again, it's below the MEA, we could be given that as an altitude, and it's perfectly fine because the controller knows it's above their minimum instrument altitude. Would you query everything that was lower than what you saw on the chart? I mean, where does this stop?
Yeah. Well, something like this, I think this is pretty much a red flag. But I just want to talk a little bit, too, about the setup to this. Again, you know, the error chain, and you mentioned it a little bit, Keith, in the intro and the setup. This controller was Seattle Center working in approach control, which is only one little piece of a whole big sky, working a lot of airplanes that were probably descending into, you know, airliners and stuff, descending into in terminals to the north. And, you know, controllers are going to look for the easiest way out. And the easiest way out is going to be give this little guy that is down below all my traffic, is no factor for anybody else, clear direct to this fix, clear for the approach, cancel, go away, get out of my hair, get off my frequency. You know, and that's a kind of a limitation to a mid-shift operations. This happened a couple of minutes before midnight. Approach control just closed. The center's taken over the airspace. They're probably combining sectors also, working multiple frequencies. And how much, we don't really know in the actual incident how much frequency congestion there was going on. But that could certainly be a thing here too. You know, you're trying to, you could even be trying to question it. And so it goes back to your whole thing about, no, I'm not going to descend. You know, and I think Wally's, one of your favorite expressions is, when in doubt, don't go down.
Yeah, right.
John, I have a question for you. Sure. Although the 8,000 MEA might explain the center controller coming up with that altitude of 8,000 feet, does that center controller have a depiction of the RNAV approach available to him without dialing it up?
What they would have would be, no, they could bring up the approach plate in a separate display. They have an electronic display, much like ForeFlight or something, where it's just the approach plate. What they have on the video map would be the fix, Conley, probably maybe one or two of the other fixes, the final approach course, and the airport.
He would not have that 10,000.
The altitude, is not shown on the display.
He would have to have looked at, he or she would have to have looked at the approach plate. Offline approach plate.
Which makes it unlikely that they would have verified what it was. They would simply say at or above the minimum instrument altitude, which would have been depicted on their video map. Right. They'd say, okay, at or above, you're good to go. If MEA is higher, that's not really on the controller. They're going to assume that the pilot is going to.
And part of the problem with this was the MEA at Conlon, the further out fix, at 8,000 was okay. When you go towards that final fix, that Breku or whatever it is, that the terrain actually comes up. So I'm not sure where the airway goes, but the airway could go off in another direction from Conlon. So that airway is good at 8,000 the whole way.
Correct.
But that feeder route is now differently. So, you know, it still all comes down to situational awareness on both parts.
Jeff, I'd like to go back to your question a little bit about do we question them when they give us a lower altitude? And that may or may not be appropriate every time, but you don't have to look at this chart very hard to see all that light brown and dark brown on there to say, if there's a place I want to question this altitude, it's right here.
Yeah.
I do question just the one thing, Wally, because I have JEPs up, but does the NACO show the color as well?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it's very obvious, and it's darkest right at that intersection.
Yes,
and like for flight now, you can overlay the sectional and the approach plate together. Yeah, not just the terrain on that, but the terrain on both. And it'll show the approach procedure, and it's, you know, it makes it very, very easy to visualize exactly what you have to do.
You know, that said, with technology, you know, clearly we have a lot more potential terrain warning, but this pilot is in a Cirrus with synthetic vision and terrain warning, I mean, right there on the PFD. And just for the scenario, I went and ran this approach just to make sure at 8,000, and it's beautiful, green, safe, rolling hills ahead of you until you are almost at bracket, if that's pronounced correctly. And it just is beginning to turn yellow. And there's certainly nothing that's red. So terrain warning isn't necessarily going to be a huge clue here. Because we do, speaking of getting acclimatized, you get acclimatized on approach to seeing stuff start to turn yellow, especially if you're descending, because it's predictive, right? Even if you're planning to level off, the system doesn't know that, so it's starting to show, you know, potential things that are ahead of you. And that gets into a little bit of, like, dependence on technology.
Yeah. And the controller would also get the same alert. There would be a minimum safe altitude warning on this, which you got to wonder if that happened, depending upon how far or how close you were to that terrain. But sooner or later, the ATC computer is also going to generate an MSAW alert.
Well, now that brings up an interesting point of it's late at night. You know, this is an out-of-the-way airport. What if you weren't talking to ATC here? What if at Conley you got cleared for the approach, frequency change approved, cancel IFR on this, you know, cancel IFR on this frequency change approved, done.
Yep.
Now, how much radar monitoring do you have at that point?
Well, the controller would still monitor the data block and probably make a call in the blind, you know, to Cirrus, whatever, and check your altitude. You may or may not be there.
You may have made that frequency change.
You know, which is also why it's a good idea sometimes to, if you do that frequency change, to still monitor ATC on the number two, especially that late at night. There's not much going on the CTAF that you couldn't listen to the other frequency at the same time. But again, it still comes back to, as you know, Keith, ultimately you're the one who took that descent. And as far as we're talking about ATC, the flip side of that is I wouldn't be terribly concerned about climbing. One of your concerns was that you would be climbing back into an airplane that might be at 9 or 10 or so above you. Once the controller sees you at 10 and clears you for the approach, they're pretty much considering 10 and below is conditional use altitudes. You can't use any of those altitudes. They'll see the mode C start to unwind, but it's going through 95, 94, something like that. Probably 11 is the lowest that they would assign anybody at that point until they really see you solid at 8. Technically, you can use 1,000 feet between verified, but they're probably not going to use that altitude until they actually see you well below it.
If they've seen you at 8 for the past 20 to 25 miles, though, they have no expectation that you're going to climb again. And I'm wondering if in their mind, okay, now it's clear. Now the coast is clear. This guy's not coming back up. I can send someone through.
Yeah. There's still a reluctance to,
is that right?
to kind of, yeah. Probably because you're not actually level at 8. You know, you were at 11. You were given a clearance. So you got 3,000 feet to lose. And whatever the descent rate is, it's going to be 10 or 15 miles down the road before you're at 8 on that feeder fix. Feeder fix is, what, 35 miles long or something? It's a long segment. So, you know, that's kind of a gray area, but I would say more than likely I wouldn't worry about climbing back up, at least climbing back up initially to 9 or 10 or something like that.
I think the urgency of the climb would also depend on your awareness of the terrain at that point. So once you realize you are low, how quickly do we pull back? Using modern technology, you can tell you, is it absolutely right now or do we have some time? If it's green all around you, then you can actually take a breather and say, hang on, should I call him or should I not?
And that, frankly, I wouldn't be worried about the airplane above me. They got TCAS. No, but they do.
And we would have traffic in the Cirrus as well to see traffic up there.
But so you'd have the some other thing realistically is possibly Eugene, but I just looked, Eugene's 118 miles away. And Portland is even farther. Yeah. So I don't think you're going to see any regionals down at that altitude.
No. But that sector might be working all the Portland arrivals coming out of flight levels, especially because it's been combined up. But, yeah, traffic down that low, there might be the check hauler flying around or something. Or
checks?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm dating myself there. You know, the FedEx guy is driving around, Prime Air, those guys.
It brings up a good point. If you weren't talking to ATC and you did climb back up to 10,000, would you even bother telling them?
Yeah.
Switch back over, get back in touch.
And verify, did I miss something here? What's going on? And maybe, do one more turn at that hold or something with their approval or say, hey, can I get vectored back out and start this all over again or something? I mean, depending upon where you are and how stable you are at that point, you know.
I see. Yeah. If you haven't broken off the approach, I would rather not throw the baby out with the bathwater. The last thing I want to do is, if that Seattle center controller is really that busy, do I really want to have to start the whole thing again? That's what I meant about not overreacting. Once we get back up to 10, if we're LNAV, right on the route, what is the advantage of actually starting again?
Nothing.
Unless you're frazzled. Unless you have no confidence in the rest of the approach and you want to regroup. Then I'd agree with you.
You saw pine trees go by.
Well, there is that.
Yeah. It's interesting that in the actual incident with the SkyWest RJ, they opted to go back out and do that. I think it's a localizer to 1.4, something like that.
Yeah.
They said, forget this. We're doing a different approach.
And it, just as one more thing on this approach here, this pilot did kind of set himself up a little bit. In the introduction, talked about this was a regular run. The pilot should have known that, that altitude was, the seemingly extra low. The pilot also chose this approach rather than taking the approach for runway 14 to avoid circling at night. But if you look, runway 14 approach has a nice 3.06 degree glide path. I was noticing on this RNAV Delta approach, it is a 6.9 degree descent to the runway.
Hence the Delta.
It's an unusual descent. And so I think that also goes to the thinking ahead even further back, not only how am I going to get onto the approach, but then what kind of an approach is it? How am I going to come into this airport at night and tire? Which is the lesser of evils here? Whether, this super steep approach, maybe that's why I really wanted to get down, or I am going to have to fly a downwind at night, but the ceilings are high enough that it's not really a night circle. Sometimes there's no perfectly safe way to do it, but it sounds like no matter what, it's that thinking ahead and walking through the steps so you know what's coming up, and if something out of the ordinary happens, like even a bum clearance from ATC or a questionable one, it flags an alarm right away before the terrain warning starts doing it for you.